Hi, I'm Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Friday evenings, 8 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings that control the courts. Don't be a loser. And if you don't appear, you will be held in contempt.
Deep understanding must arise during these times of unparalleled deceit. A view into the depths of society upon which this country has fallen. A storm brews upon the horizon. It's been said that those that have the eyes to see and the ears to hear will play a paramount role in the furthering of humanity and civilized society. But can civilized society and humanity survive the coming conflicts not seen since a dawn of time in ages bypassed? But you can find true forms of information and knowledge in abundance at revolution.radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the globe. Stand upon the right side of history. Right side of history.
General Holder, you've got to get us out of here now! I won't let you down. I won't let you down, son.
Revolution.
Welcome to the Interstellar Earth Alliance, hosted by Viking. Take a journey where no one has truly ever gone before. Exploring the infinite timelines of reality expressed through the crystalline grid of humanity that we know as the divine expression of love and light. So, welcome all terrestrial and extraterrestrial beings as well. So be it, and so shall it be. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
All right, folks, I got a little bit of bad news for you today. We got no Viking. He had to have off today. I'm not real sure what's wrong. Hopefully he's healthy. There's nothing wrong with his health, but he did have to have off. So I'm going to fill in for him today. Glad to have you here at revolution.radio, freedomslips.net, and freedomslips.org. I looked and I tried to find a little something that was, you know, into his topic area, and I found one that was, I listened through a little bit of it, and it was kind of technical. I don't know if it would be a whole hour's worth of good listening. Probably has some good stuff in it. But I think you probably needed to watch the video along with it to see it. So we're not gonna do that one. We're just gonna jump over onto this full film called The Truth Illusion. And I did kind of go through it, and you don't really have to see what they're on the film to understand what they're talking about. You'll be able to get something from it, and I think you'll like it. I didn't hear the whole thing, but it was interesting to me. I'm looking forward to listening to it. I hope Viking gets well and is able to be with us again on his next show. Thank you for being here with us, and I'll be back in about 51 minutes to end this one, and I'll have some more clips to play, a couple more clips, because this is a two-hour show, and I'm glad to be privileged to fill in for him. Thank you, and here we'll start this right now.
COVID-19!
COVID-19!
you.
On you.
This virus is nowhere near the numbers they're saying.
The data is wrong. This is corruption beyond belief.
How many vaccines have you had? Have you been a good little Nazi?
These are the companies that gave us the opioid crisis. Why does anybody think we can trust them?
I would not eliminate execution as an appropriate punishment.
The logo for Biden, it's not the letter E, it's three straight red lines. It's 666 in Hebrew.
This is Satan's last hurrah, because he's really the ruler of this planet.
Humanless technology, that's what we're talking about when we say 5G killed.
And we could dismember, we could fall apart.
What are you gonna do, arrest me?
We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
You want to create apprehension, hatred, distrust.
This is a battle about what the truth actually is.
Do you think aliens are still visiting Earth now?
Yes.
Truth isn't truth.
This is unreal.
This whole nation's gonna flip on the streets.
The struggles politically over the next 10 or 20 years are about what reality we actually live in.
What on earth is that?
What is it?
Big, huge, yellow glow out there.
You may be the first television audience to see a flying saucer.
Hundreds of reports of strange objects in the sky have been filed with the Air Force. Here on this map are pinpointed locations where some 30 saucers have been sighted and are still unexplained.
I was a counterintelligence specialist. I handled counterintelligence operations for the United States Air Force. Back in the early 80s, we had a drone program at Kirtland Air Force Base, highly classified back then. So people would see these things flying around Kirtland Air Force Base, and we tried to deceive them or fool them to think that what they were seeing was in fact UFOs.
And then it seemed to just go together, make a ball, and fly out into that field.
We co-opted news organizations, local news media. And we planted stories, and they went along with it because they didn't know the truth.
How widespread was this operation?
Oh, it was very widespread. It went all the way up through the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And then from there, it would go up to the Director of Central Intelligence. And then from there, it would go to the White House.
Looked like a big cigar shape with light lit from both ends.
Do you think the lies you told about UFOs damaged the public's trust in the media?
Yes, I'd have to say, unfortunately, it did. Because when the real story came out sometime later, they were deceived by the media, yeah.
And just as we started down the woods, well, it went up through the trees.
Do you believe it weakened the public's trust in the government as well?
Well, yes, the public was deceived by the government, and for all these years, the government is still deceiving the public.
If you asked Americans whether they had faith in the government to do the right thing, in the mid-1960s, 77% of them say, yes, I've got faith in the government.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
We go through Vietnam. We go through Nixon.
That was a classic case where people suddenly realized that the people in the White House were a bunch of crooks.
People have got to know
whether or not their president is a crook.
And they had overwhelming evidence of that.
Well, I'm not a crook. I've earned everything I've got.
You had subsequent phenomena like the Iran-Contra scandal.
By their very nature, covert operations or special activities are a lie.
By the time we hit the 1980s and Reagan, we're down to about 25% of Americans who say they trust the government.
One of Reagan's greatest crises involved the secret sale of weapons to Iran in violation of U.S. policy.
We did not, repeat, did not trade weapons or anything else for hostages.
You then had the Iraq War and all the business about weapons of mass destruction.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence.
I had perpetrated a hoax on the UN Security Council on February 5th, 2003. Today, I feel some grievous remorse over it.
Saddam Hussein and his regime have made no effort to disarm as required by the international community.
Can you walk me through the moment when you realized that mistake?
We learned it all during the summer of 2003, after the presentation.
Saddam Hussein and his regime are concealing their efforts to produce more weapons of mass destruction.
As Powell would walk through the door and tell me with a disconsolate look on his face, another pillar just collapsed. Whether it was the stockpile of chemical and biological weapons or the biological weapons labs.
Imagine how I felt the day that they finally came in and said to me, well, you know, we don't have four independent sources for that biological warfare van. It's one guy, and he's loopy, and he's in a German jail, and we've never talked to him. Hello?
Throughout the summer, Powell was essentially involved both publicly and privately in trying to rationalize what we'd done. It was not a bad war, it was a good war. Saddam Hussein was an evil person, he's gone, that's good. All of it fell apart over the summer. By August, it was all gone.
I understood the consequences of that failure. I deeply regret that the information, some of the information, not all of it, some of the information I presented, which was multi-source, was wrong.
Can you give examples of other lies the U.S. has told to justify the use of force in the world?
The most vivid case in my memory is the war I fought in, the Vietnam conflict.
Until peace comes to South Vietnam, the Allied force is pledged to support, protect, and defend a nation fighting for its very life.
I was a first lieutenant and a captain in that war, and did my best to do what I was supposed to do for my country. But I will tell you that when I found out later, there were several reasons we persisted in that war in Vietnam, and none of them were God, country, apple pie, mom, security, or anything else. They were things like, could Lyndon Baines Johnson get reelected if he cut and ran from Vietnam?
It is by Hanoi's choice and not ours, and not the rest of the world, that the war continues.
How does it make me feel? It makes me feel terrible. It makes me feel like my country has failed me. It makes me feel like my government has failed me. It makes me feel like there is little to be trusted about the U.S. government with regard to the national security state anymore.
A copter is down in a rice paddy, and the troops run to the safety of other craft.
You get this new class of guardians, neoconservatives, emerging out of the wreckage of the Vietnam War in the United States. These politicians are advised by a new class of technical expert in politics in order to manufacture new realities and manufacture political stories.
Give me some flames. How about some screaming?
Screaming's good.
Some sound of screaming.
You have highly intelligent press handlers, manipulators.
I told lies on behalf of the government, sometimes at my own behest, sometimes because I was asked to do so.
The voice of senior Bush advisor Karl Rove.
In the case of George W. Bush, it was Karl Rove.
The ugly things that people say are at the heart of supposedly the kind of campaigns I run, most of which are, you know, sort of fear-based, smear-based, mudball politics.
Karl Rove was one of the most powerful and eminent of the neoconservatives' clique.
Thank you again for this extraordinary opportunity.
And he very much believed that reality was not something which had passive existence out there, it's something you can actively recreate.
Karl Rove probably put it best when he said, when an empire acts, it creates reality. What Rove meant by that specific comment was that Rome, the British Empire at its peak, created reality in the world by the power they wielded, both economic, financial, and military.
What we can do is mold and modify and influence the way people see the reality. That can have effects on the reality. That reality can be intervened on by ways in which people are influenced to see themselves and to see one another.
Why is it that Americans tolerate their reality being manipulated when presumably they could choose to reject that interference?
American people, by and large, are comfortable with that. It brings them profit, it brings them safety and security, it brings them a reasonably good life. They simply don't have the intellectual capacity to deal with what being an empire means.
So what you are doing, quite deliberately, as a political strategy in order to win elections, is to create enormous divisions, perilous divisions in the long term, in society itself. You want to create apprehension, hatred, distrust. These new realities they try to create always have a dividing line between us and them.
They're tearing down our statues. Why? Trust me, the signs are there. And these people are trying to overtake this country and this world, for that matter.
Because that is the easiest way of preying on the darkest elements inside the human soul. And we all have dark elements inside us.
I overheard Carl say one time outside a chiefs of staff meeting, he said, you know, if we milk this terrorist thing right, we can stay in power for a long time. It's purely ruthlessness.
The threat is so unknown and so dangerous that the vice president must be taken to an undisclosed location, that in the event the president is dead, we have continuity of government.
I fear life. I was just talking to a friend of mine about learning how to hunt for deer with a bow and skin it myself. We call it living off the grid, meaning getting a farm somewhere in the middle of nowhere and living out that way.
As governments become less genuinely responsive to the needs of their people and increasingly serve a set of interests which are not those of the vast majority of the population, then the notion that they are a force of good or that they are telling the truth similarly recedes.
The politics of a manipulative populism is the best way of describing it. Manipulative populism is about constructing false emotions or built anger, hatred.
Nearly 180,000 illegal immigrants with criminal records are tonight roaming free to threaten peaceful citizens.
If you're out after dark, it's not going to be safe because of these people.
groups like Black Lives Matter, the Communist Party. I mean, they have been very militant agitators. They've been getting in people's faces. I mean, it's not safe.
We are in a world where what politicians say, what others say, are completely detached now from a meaningful underlying reality.
This was the largest audience to ever witness an inauguration, period.
When Sean Spicer says this is the biggest inauguration, more people have come to this inauguration than the history of inaugurations, part of me is sort of just rolling my eyes and thinking, well, this is just another ridiculous, you know, moment.
These attempts to lessen the enthusiasm of the inauguration are shameful and wrong.
Part of me is also thinking, like, how many people are really, like, buying this right now? Are people really buying into this? If we ran a survey right now, what percentage of Trump supporters would say that they saw more people in the picture on the right than in the picture on the left? This was a case where we could show them factual evidence, like photographic evidence, and see if they would still tell us that, you know, something that's not true right before their eyes is true to them. A friend I work with at a survey firm said, let's do it. And so the next day we put out the survey. The results of our experiment showed that 15% of American adults basically said that they saw in the picture that had fewer people in it, they said that's the one that had more people in it. And that was the one from Trump's inauguration.
In a way, that's kind of quite astounding, because it seems so completely obvious that there were more people present for Obama's inauguration than for Trump's. The pictures seem completely clear. Now, the interesting question there is, did they say that because they believed it, or did they say it because that's what their side required them to say?
What makes it interesting is this 15% wasn't seeing what was there in front of them to be seen.
Our imaginations play tricks on us. They often misinterpret what we see and hear.
They were not seeing what was true because they were invested in seeing something else.
I will faithfully execute
the office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
We like to think that facts lead to beliefs, but in fact, beliefs affect how we approach facts. When people already believe something, showing them a fact doesn't necessarily help, because they want to look at that fact through the prism of what they already believe.
So help me God.
What we see here is not simply a cynical form of lying, but real self-deception. Let me give you an example. There's a Marx Brothers scene where Groucho and Chico are trying not to appear in the same time.
Come in. Oh, Your Excellency, I'm so glad you've come.
I'm glad I come too.
It's a very Marx Brothers kind of scene. And so Groucho hides under the bed.
Your Excellency.
At one point, Margaret Dumont says to Chico, she says, but I saw you leave with
my own eyes.
And Chico says, yeah, but who do you believe?
Me or your own eyes?
And I think that's a comic representation of a potentially very tragic period that we find ourselves in. If people are not willing to believe their own eyes, but believe a false ideology, then we're not going to be able to meet in reality.
Then people came up with lines like, well, there are facts and there are alternative facts.
Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that, but the point remains.
Wait a minute. Alternative facts? I think the invention of the notion of alternative facts, when basically those are just patently untrue, they're lies, they're falsehoods, is incredibly corrosive. Historically, politicians would lie and try to get away with it. They wouldn't lie in such a blatant way that everybody could easily fact check it by looking at a simple photo, and then go on national TV and defend the lie.
Honestly, it looked like 1.5 million people. Whatever it was, but it went all the way back to the Washington Monument.
The classic discussion in Orwell's 1984 about, you know, 2 + 2 = 5, right? Where, you know, Winston, the character, is basically being tortured by a representative of Big Brother who's trying to get him to believe that 2 + 2 = 5.
How many fingers, Winston?
4, 5, 4. Anything you like. Only stop the pain. Stop.
And Winston has great difficulty believing that 2 + 2 = 5. And he has great difficulty believing that for the simple reason that 2 + 2 is not 5.
2 and 2 make 4.
Sometimes they're 5, sometimes 3, or all of them at once.
2 + 2 will never equal 5. You can't construct your own truth in the sense that things are true or false, independent of what you happen to think about. On the other hand, you can intervene and get people to think certain things or act in certain ways. That might influence them to, we say, modify and alter the reality that they're living in.
Do you think politicians are lying more often now in order to shape a false reality?
I think the deeper issue is not that lying is more prevalent. I think lying is more prevalent. But the ease of believing things that are false becomes more prevalent.
By the time we get to Obama and then Trump, we're under 15% of Americans who say they trust the government.
Well, we want to do everything we can to help you succeed, because if you succeed, then the country succeeds.
USA, 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 USA.
What's happened in the U.S. is that the Republican Party in particular has started weaponizing that mistrust.
We are going to Washington, D.C., and we are going to drain the swamp.
So they've taken an old populist trick, the system's against you, but I'm for you. Let me rise above the corrupt system and lead you to a new bright future. Trump has done this to a T.
It's what happened with drain the swamp. It's a great phrase, but it's true.
He's taken on the government, dismissing much of it as the deep state.
Unelected deep state operatives who defy the voters to push their own secret agendas are truly a threat to democracy itself.
But his primary enemy has been the media.
The media in this country is sold out. There is no more journalism. There is no more First Amendment. It's disgusting what they have done.
The media has been lying to us one too many times, and now we just don't believe them anymore.
So how did it come to this?
One step at a time, one lie at a time.
They are the enemy of the people.
Now more than ever, you see people going up to reporters and calling them out for their lies that they've told. But again, they've gotten brazen. You can't even reason with these people. They're lying to your face. They know they're lying to your face. All those people just need to shut up.
This can be weaponized and manipulated and used by leaders, because if they know that they're not going to be held accountable by their own supporters and that there aren't going to be severe electoral consequences for them, then it's more reasonable for them to lie.
Trump's a bolster. The bolster is more dangerous than the liar. Because the liar at least cares about where the truth is. He will just say whatever it is he thinks will be helpful, regardless of where the truth is.
Like you'll go person, woman, man, camera, TV.
The fact that people then started to talk about, you know, alternative facts and alternative realities, and we're now living in a post-truth world and so on, what was really going on was the politicization of truth.
Truth is truth. I don't mean to go like...
No, it isn't truth. Truth isn't truth.
Go Trump! This has gone so wide that things that would be counted as completely out of bounds are now being counted as true, because there are media and social media that can reinforce that.
Where can someone go to get a truthful reading on what's really going on here?
Individuals on the street, so social media, And people now with these cell phones with video cameras, we can just take video wherever we go, and then we can post it online, and it spreads.
There's so many different narratives and messages being pushed on social media. It's easy to create misinformation, conspiracy theories, and fake news, and churn it out really effectively to large volumes of the population.
There was a time, I think, in which there was a very idealistic view that social media would be a great liberatory force to kind of suppress narratives and really find out the truth of matters.
But there are people who use those technologies intentionally in order to divorce us from what is the truth, in order to impose their own sense of what the truth is for their own political purposes.
Trump leveraged social media to spread misinformation at a scale that's probably never been used before, maybe on Earth.
He knows how to prey on people's deep insecurities by creating enemies which don't exist, but exist in people's minds. This is the new technology of political warfare.
He tells people, don't trust institutions of higher learning. Don't trust universities. Don't trust professors. Don't trust scientists.
All of these experts, we need an expert. The experts are terrible.
Early on, so this is January 2020, when the very first cases of COVID were spreading from China and then to Italy and then to the U.S., Trump and prominent elites in the Republican media ecosphere said that this isn't going to be a big deal.
We have it totally under control.
We think we have it very well under control.
Right now, Louisiana is doubling every 3 days. Florida is doubling every four in terms of the total cases in those states.
We're in very good shape.
We pretty much shut it down.
This has been a massive exercise in fear mongering. When we have a virus that internationally has a death rate of 0.6%. It's well over 99% survival rate.
We've opened up new medical units in order to accommodate for this increased demand of patients who are coming in so ill.
What we started doing was that everybody in the hospital was given a COVID diagnosis.
The scope of the seriousness of this infection is extraordinary.
You could go into the hospital and die from a ruptured appendix or from a heart attack or a stroke. And if they tested you or not, they could put COVID on your death certificate.
A lot of the rooms are all isolation now because every single patient, for the most part, is a COVID diagnosis.
They're tripling the numbers, they're doubling the numbers, they're lying about the numbers, the testing is faulty.
There was a coroner in Washington State who was there to sign a bunch of death certificates. And on a third of the death certificates, it had COVID as the cause of death. And what the real cause of death was gunshot wounds.
These are the companies that gave us the opioid crisis. Why does anybody think we can trust them?
We do not consent. We will not comply.
You're dealing with companies that are serial criminals. The four companies that make all 72 vaccines that are mandated for American children have paid, since 2009, over $30 billion in criminal penalties for defrauding regulators, for falsifying science, for lying to doctors, blackmailing, bribing doctors and medical regulators, and for killing hundreds of thousands of Americans.
What's really happened is we've seen the merger of two forces that are skeptical of traditional knowledge claims. The anti-vax movement, historically, is a left-wing movement.
Is this another eugenics experiment, like Tuskegee or forced sterilization?
We simply don't trust you. And why would we?
As the Jenny Miskovits video, Plandemic, started getting traction both in left-wing and in right-wing circles, you have this sort of notion that all we can agree on is that nothing the government says about COVID should be believed.
With all the best intention, we studied, we learned what we thought was the truth. We had no idea that the data that we were being told was true was not true.
Then, for reasons of political expediency, Donald Trump felt like COVID was a personal threat to his presidency. And so what we saw was fascinating and terrifying.
I don't wear masks like him. Every time you see him, he's got a mask. He could be speaking 200 feet away from it. He shows up with the biggest mask I've ever seen.
Donald Trump himself had said that, you know, if you wear a mask, it's a signal of disloyalty to him.
Look at you fools, you got a doily on your face.
So what you saw at that phase of the pandemic, you saw lots of viral videos.
You're a bunch of wear masks.
Of people in stores or shopping or restaurants who were supporters of Donald Trump who were freaking out when they were asked to wear masks.
You're coming close to me. You're coming close
back
to me.
Back off! Back me again!
There's a wildly irrational part of the human psyche, which you can trace back, you know, to the witchcraft crazes of the 17th century.
Your children and your children's children will be subjugated!
You would hope that people became a lot more rational. In the last 20 to 30 years, we have had a return to irrational behavior.
And when we asked, how many vaccines have you had? Have you been a good little Nazi?
There have always been conspiracy theories about pandemics. In Europe, in the mid-14th century, there was a plague known as the Black Death, which killed a very large proportion of the population of Europe. Now, that was blamed on the Jews, as many conspiracy theories are.
The term conspiracy theory is an interesting term because it was a term that was originally popularized by the CIA in order to discredit people who were saying that the Warren Commission, which was the commission that had investigated my uncle's assassination, were crazy and that, you know, they shouldn't be paid attention to.
Today, the Warren Report attempts to unravel the dark twists into which the national tragedy was thrown.
I think it's very tempting for people to look for a conspiratorial explanation. Then you can pin it on somebody.
The American people are awake and aware to the fact that manipulated viral strains are being waged against the people by corrupt individuals in our government. There you go, boom, people know.
Well, I think you have to look at who's behind the entire pandemic propaganda. And it's the people at the World Economic Forum. It's the Davos billionaires that fund it. It's the people at Google and Apple and Amazon, all of the big tech people who have been trillions of dollars richer since this started.
So I think that we need to, you know, have Bill Gates, you know, in front of the judicial committee here in the Senate and ask him what's his long-term vision for injecting everyone with this vaccine, because clearly it has nothing to do with SARS-CoV-19.
Internet users have accused the billionaire of deliberately spreading the virus in order to control the world's population using geolocalized 5G microchips.
It's surprising to me how interesting that is, so it spreads far more quickly than the truth.
Bill Gates has bragged that his company is going to be able to look at every human being on Earth 24 hours a day. And they're following us in our homes. You know, people think that Alexa works for you. She doesn't. You're working for her. You're telling her your secrets. You're telling her your data. Ultimately, they will be able to punish disobedience. They already do.
They're ushering in the transhumanism movement through these vaccines, and they're moving people into robotics and hooking people up to the Google Cloud that then we can be controlled by the Chinese social credit scores.
Humanless technologies, okay? So that's what we're talking about when we say 5G kills, and we don't want a surveillance state here in the United States of America like they do have in China.
And if you speak out too much like me and you're not marching lockstep with the propaganda machine, then you get negative social credit scores. vaccines are stated to have something in them called hydrogel, which is nanobot nanotechnology.
Nanotechnology is being used inside of these vaccines in order to propagate communication with other technologies, essentially turning the human experience into one where we integrate in a transhumanist vision with mechanized technologies or anything that could influence our genetic structure as human beings.
And you're going to have all of your medical records, all of everything, into this scanning device.
The quantum dot tattoo will implant an invisible certificate that can be scanned by authorities using a cell phone app and infrared light.
If the scores get to be too low because you're not being a fully engaged, obedient citizen, you can't access your bank account, you can't go to the doctor, you won't be able to travel, you won't be able to get a mortgage, you won't be able to renew your driver's license, you may not be able to get fuel for your car.
What do you say to the medical professionals that are just beginning to get a glimpse of the depth to which they have been misled and steered away from their oath to do no harm?
I say forgive yourselves.
You can pull on any number of threads and very quickly find yourself in a world not only where someone is trying to sell you a conspiracy theory, but where they're pointing you to dozens of other sources that will confirm that same sort of narrative.
Five presidents in the world have been assassinated for speaking out that their countries weren't having any COVID problems at all.
There's no question in my mind that conspiracy theory has exacerbated the COVID-19 pandemic.
This is psychological warfare. It has nothing to do with our health.
It shows up most vividly in my profession, 31 years in the Army, where we have 40% of the Marine Corps refusing to be vaccinated. Fully a third of the other services refusing to be vaccinated. That's a result of this sort of conspiracy theory epidemic, if you will, within the pandemic.
The people behind the entire pandemic propaganda are stated Satanists. They will tell you that right out when you read things about them. This is Satan's last hurrah. I mean, this is just a big heyday for, you know, because he's really the ruler of this planet.
When a disease, a virus, is thought to be a tool of Satan, then there's not really much to discuss.
I'm not saying that some of the conspiracy theory isn't based on reality. Some of it is, but most of it is based on ignorance, fear, even apathy. And this is the biggest factor of all, orchestration by unseemly politicians who know it's false, but see how many people believe it and want those people's votes.
This man was holding large re-election rallies all throughout the pandemic with, you know, supporters gathering en masse. The super spreaders.
You can lie about crowd sizes all you want. No one gets hurt. It doesn't matter, right? It's offensive to some people, but it doesn't matter. There's no consequence to saying you had a bigger crowd or than someone else. But the moment you're lying about a deadly disease, probably the deadliest pandemic in 100 years, then people will die as a consequence of that lie.
Whether or not you got COVID and died at a rally is frankly irrelevant, because there is some sort of political spectacle that is occurring here that your death is serving.
CNN projects Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States, winning the White House and denying President Trump a second term.
We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
The Lord says it is done. The Lord says it is done.
This is a fraud on the American public. This is an embarrassment to our country.
Everybody in this country knows Donald Trump won this election. Everyone around the world knows he won this election. And if they take the freedom from our vote in this country will never come back again.
There was a plan
from a centralized place to execute these various acts of voter fraud, specifically focused on big cities controlled by Democrats.
Victory, 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 victory.
We're fighting for our freedom. We're fighting for the United States Constitution. We're fighting for fair elections.
For the well-being of this country, the founding fathers, and the left is trying to tear us apart, and we're not going to be torn apart.
Because I know you keep reporting falsely that we have no evidence, that we have no specific acts of fraud. That's because the coverage of this has been almost as dishonest as the scheme itself.
They are treating us like they did, like Nazi Germany did the Jews, okay? We are being silenced. We are being called racists, bigots. You name it, we're being called it.
What we are really dealing with here is the massive influence of communist money through Venezuela, Cuba, and likely China in the interference with our elections here in the United States.
They got the world thinking nobody likes Donald Trump. Everybody in this country loves Donald Trump. They're trying to shut down our voices, and it's not going to happen. Look at how many people here. Joe Biden couldn't fill a garage. This is a joke and an insult to America.
If you know just a little bit of Hebrew, and I recommend you do, the number six is simply a straight line up and down. If you put three of those together, you have 666, which is the mark of the beast. The logo for Biden has got three straight red lines in it. It's not the letter E, it's three straight red lines. It's 666 in Hebrew. The Bible is written in Hebrew. So there you have it. Is there a correlation? I'm saying definitively there is.
There's plenty of evidence out there already that there's been widespread election fraud. It was done through voting machines. At the end, when they realized, oh my God, he's getting more votes than we even planned our fraud for, they were then in the middle of the night filling out ballots.
At 4:30 in the morning, a truck pulled up to the Detroit Center where they were counting ballots. The people thought it was food, so they all ran to the truck. It wasn't food. It was thousands and thousands of ballots.
What kind of clear and transparent election has ballots being delivered 3 and 4 in the morning? And then they don't allow Republicans or independents to witness the counting in Philadelphia and Detroit, two major cities in swing states.
And they're estimated to be a minimum of 60,000, maximum of 100,000. Many of them were triple counted, which means they were put into the counting machine this way. Once, twice, three times.
Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of our ballots were simply thrown in the trash.
Now, the software itself was created with so many variables and so many back doors that can be hooked up to the internet or a thumb drive stuck in it or whatever.
I mean, Hitler is in his grave right now smiling at the Democratic Party right now, based on what we're seeing right now. This is unreal.
One of its most characteristic features is its ability to take a certain percentage of votes from President Trump and flip them to President Biden.
If you participated in voter fraud, I'm thinking a minimum of 5 years in prison. If you conspired and you were a leader, then a minimum of 10 years in prison.
That's what the Democrats do. If they don't like the rules, they change them. And they change them at the last minute. They manipulate them. They want to tear down our American system.
And if you were a person who was kind of at the top, who, for instance, maybe ran a voting machine company or was directly involved in switching millions of votes, I'm sorry, but I would not eliminate execution as an appropriate punishment.
No, there's no evidence. There's been no evidence that these machines have done any of the things that Trump claims, that they've been producing extra votes for Biden or whatever else. And there's just no evidence of that. And, you know, lots of political scientists, lots of election scientists spend a lot of time looking at this stuff, and there's just nothing there.
Fight for Trump! Fight for Trump!
That lie, that idea that Biden stole the 2020 election, is believed by 63% of Republicans in the United States. 70% of Republican House members voted to question those election results in an attempt to overturn them. So we now have one of only two of our political parties largely taken over by a group of people who are putting forward weaponized mistrust, which is to say a lie.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
There was no insurrection, and to call it an insurrection, in my opinion, is a bold-faced lie.
You did your job! You did your job! Now let us do ours!
The government did this to us. We were normal, good, law-abiding citizens, and you guys did this to us!
Watching the TV footage of those who entered the Capitol and walked through Statuary Hall showed people in an orderly fashion staying between the stanchions and ropes taking videos and pictures.
This is a battle, an argument, a dispute, not about the nature of truth. It's an argument about what the truth actually is.
You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was a video from January the 6th, you would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
What happens now that we've literally diverged in fact patterns? What happens that we literally now have a group that don't believe in the legitimacy of the presidency? And I don't know the answer.
I think we're in a situation where democracies such as they exist are threatened. And one of the reasons that they're threatened is when you have people who are encouraged to believe things that aren't true in a deep and radical way, and therefore can't even communicate with people who are trying to understand the truth.
This is our country, this is our house.
You can't really get the kind of debate that democracy would allow.
That may well be how democracy dies, is if we have a sufficiently divergent fact pattern that we can't agree on a single reality to try to collectively govern.
This is a huge question for today's America. How do you function as a democracy if your people, or a sizable majority of them, don't trust your government? It's a huge question. A lot of political scientists believe you can't. And therefore, we could dismember, we could fall apart.
If it continues, then I think we're going to see increasing chaos and increasing disruption and probably increasing violence as well.
The struggles politically of the next 10 or 20 years are not about the interpretation of facts. They're about what reality we actually live in. And I think right now, no one is actually trying to change anybody's minds about how to interpret reality. We are just at war over what reality itself actually is.
He had large eyes, a large head, just slits for his ears, small openings for his nose, small mouth. He was about 4-something, 4'8", 4'9". He had suction devices on his fingers. He's scared. He's in this strange society, strange planet. He's captured. He doesn't know what we are. He's scared of us. But we treated him with dignity. And then eventually this military doctor said, you know what, I think I can implant something in his throat. We might be able to teach him English. And he learned English. He learned our language in just a few months. Brilliant guy. I mean, this thing is 1,000 years ahead of us in technology. His brain was larger than ours. He had an IQ of probably 300 or 400. And he spoke of hostile aliens. There's hostile races out there that will do harm. And I think that's the message that President Reagan was trying to give the people when he made those remarks at the United Nations.
Perhaps we need some outside universal threat
to make us recognize this common bound. I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
Do you think aliens are still visiting Earth now?
Yes.
Do you think your work disseminating disinformation on behalf of the US military has hurt you in some ways in now expressing a belief that aliens have in fact landed here?
Yeah, sure, yeah. The people that are saying this have never been in intelligence, never been in the military, never worked with the government, never had a security clearance. I didn't randomly go out there and become a maverick and spread disinformation to everybody I could think of. There was a particular purpose, an operation. We call it counterintelligence operation, you call it disinformation. I do understand people saying, how do we believe you when you spread disinformation? Well, I did it because I was told to do it. And I was commended, I got awards for it, and I did my job. I did what I was told to do.
And the fun part is they learned English, right?
I mean, there are all sorts of things about the world we live in which are completely impossible to explain and incomprehensible, and that's what makes it so wonderful. It's no wonder that people get a bit off beam from time to time.
That was pretty good little video there. It lasts right time too.
Gentlemen, your lives are becoming more difficult as the life force of your world is draining away. Have you noticed that as everything around you seems to decline, one thing still grows? It is the power of your rulers. None of their plans and directives have solved your problems or made your life better. The only result has been their increased control over you at the cost of your freedom. Do you know why? You gave them the power. They called for your sacrifice, and you thought it was noble. They said if you worked for yourself and your family, that you were selfish and uncaring, and they made you feel ashamed. They denounced the leaders of industry as greedy exploiters. You agreed. All evil needs to win is the consent of good people. To everyone within the range of my voice, you now have a choice to make. If you decide to support the notion of sacrifice enforced by the state, your game is up. Your world is in a downward spiral, and you will ride it down to destruction. But if you share the values, if you believe that your life is a sacred possession for you to make the most of, if you want to live by the judgment of your own mind, not edicts from the state, then follow our lead. Do not support your own oppressors. Stop letting the system exploit you. Form your own communities on the frontiers of your crumbling world. Your rulers hold you by your endurance to carry the burdens they impose, by your generosity when you hear cries of despair, and above all, by your innocence which cannot grasp the depths of their evil.
The world you are living in is the world they wanted. Leave them to it. Those who are eager to build a better world, a world of freedom and opportunity, a world based
on mutual respect. In that world, you will not receive alms, nor pity, nor forgiveness of sins, but honor, respect, and justice. Don't let the fire go out spark by irreplaceable spark in confusion and despair. The world you desire can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It is yours.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. The number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. It's your world. Take it. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio! Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
All right, welcome back to Revolution.Radio, and we are so glad to have you here. We are at the leading edge of the information warfare that is going to free this country. It's going to free the world. We're going to free the world right here on this station. All right, look here. Revolution Radio operates solely on listener support. And we happily like it that way because nobody comes in and tells us what we can and cannot play or can or cannot do. Well, you know what you can and cannot do. I don't need to tell you that. But nobody's going to tell you what you can talk about on this station. So we're going to play a little. Crow is coming up next, the next hour, and he is our market watch guy. However, I'm gonna play a little market news this hour, and maybe Crow can comment on it during his show if he's listening. One of them is gonna be about the housing market and what's coming up on that in the next year, and as soon as that's over, we're gonna catch a live broadcast coming out from the guy that I usually play in the mornings called Nobody Special. Starts in 10 minutes. We're probably going to miss a couple minutes of that. But it's going to be about the Fed contradicting itself before it contradicts itself. All right, so here we go.
The U.S. government is considering banning Wall Street hedge funds from buying homes and forcing them to sell off their entire portfolio. And folks, if that happens, home prices in neighborhoods like this have the potential to go into a deep, deep crash, because these investors, they bought up the homes, they lowered the inventory in neighborhoods like this, and they pushed up the prices. And now, if we start to see a sell-off from these investors, we could see potentially 30, 40, maybe even 50% declines in home prices. Because if we look at data from Redfin at the amount of homes purchased by investors over the last decade, we can see in a city like Las Vegas, where I am right now, a huge spike in investor activity that occurred during the pandemic. They bought over 30% of all the houses in Vegas, and in certain zip codes, they bought nearly 40% of the houses. So you have to ask yourself the question, what's going to happen if 40% of the demand not only stops buying, but starts selling due to this bill in Congress, which is called the End Hedge Fund Control of American Homes Act. And it would require these hedge funds over 10 years to sell off their portfolio. Any company with a market value of over $50 million that owns real estate would have to sell off their portfolio. And if they don't, they'd be taxed at 50% of the value of that portfolio. And in a second, I'm going to tell you guys the cities and the zip codes that would be most exposed to home price declines from this bill. However, we need to acknowledge something. That's the fact that investors, these Wall Street investors, were already getting out of the housing market before this. Here in Vegas, the investor purchases are already down by 65% from their pandemic peak at their lowest level in the last 5 or 6 years. And we're seeing more and more examples of some of these houses being sold by these Wall Street investors. I was just out in Henderson, Nevada, a suburb of Vegas, yesterday, and I found a home being sold by American Homes for Rent, the second largest landlord in America. Now, American Homes for Rent bought that house at the bottom of the last housing crash in 2012 for $170,000 and are now trying to sell it for $530,000. So huge appreciation on that from when they bought at the bottom. However, they've already had to cut the price by $30,000. So this Wall Street investor sell-off could already be happening, at least slowly and incrementally in different markets, because more and more, when I travel around America, I'm seeing these investors sell their homes. And if you live in a city or a neighborhood where these investors are selling, you better watch out, because they can completely flip the housing market. In the way that these investors piled in and caused prices to go up, if they sell out, it could just do the exact opposite. But before we get too crazy about this, folks, and think that this Wall Street hedge fund sell-off is going to crash the entire housing market, I have some bad news for you. It won't. And that's because these investors, they buy in specific cities in the specific neighborhoods. And in fact, hedge fund private equity investor homeowners own about 574,000 homes in America, according to a news article from Vice. And while that's a lot of homes, that's only 0.6% of the entire housing stock in America. So if tomorrow all these investors were to sell their homes, that wouldn't even double inventory on the U.S. housing market. It would increase it by 80% on a national basis, but in certain cities and neighborhoods, it could triple inventory or quadruple inventory. And I think one issue I have with this bill is the fact that it really only addresses a small part of investor demand in the housing market, because these hedge funds own 574,000 homes. Well, that's only a small fraction of the 27 million investor-owned homes in America. That's right, everyone. According to Adam Data Solutions, there's 27 million investor-owned properties in America. 574,000 are owned by these big Wall Street hedge fund private equity investors. So that's about 3% of all the investor-owned homes. And if they sell, well, great news for a lot of home buyers, particularly in areas like Las Vegas, where I am right now, in specific neighborhoods in Las Vegas and Phoenix, prices are going to go down a lot. But we still have the 97% of other investors that own homes in the U.S. housing market. And this bill does nothing to address their ownership and their incentives in buying a house. And in many markets, these small investors are just as much of a problem as the big investors. So in some ways, this bill is kind of like a way for the politicians to like look really good, you know, in front of a lot of people. I think probably 8 out of 10 people would say, hey, yeah, stop the hedge funds from buying homes. That's great, great news. But really, it doesn't address the fundamental problem of investor demand in the housing market. And personally, what I would do if I were in Congress or if I were president and I had some agenda setting power, I would try to take away the tax advantages that real estate investors have. Because one of the more ridiculous policies that our government enacts in its tax legislation is it subsidizes ownership of real estate, particularly for investors. Investors are allowed to depreciate the value of the house in the structure by about 3% every year, which means if you buy a house for $400,000 and the structure is worth $200,000, you could write off about $6,000 on your taxes each year, which is why a lot of wealthy, smaller time real estate investors just buy houses and let them sit vacant because they use it as a tax write-off. So if you were to theoretically get rid of that tax write-off, get rid of the depreciation benefit for owning real estate, you would see lots of investors sell, both large and small, and that would make a really meaningful impact in a lot of different housing markets, not just in concentrated areas where these Wall Street investors bought. But interesting, folks, in this neighborhood, I was able to find a house that was purchased by a Wall Street investor. If we go over here, we could see this is kind of a townhouse, a smaller townhouse. It's around 1,100 square feet. It's 3 beds, 2 baths. Now, this was purchased by an investor called Invitation Homes, who's the largest Wall Street landlord in America. They own over 80,000 homes. They used to be a part of Blackstone. And they bought this house in 2022, April 2022, for $395,000. Now, since then, the value of this house has gone down to $367,000, according to Zillow. The prices in this zip code are down about 7% from peak. So the investor here has lost equity. They've lost about 30 grand in equity. But what's even more interesting, folks, is when you dig deeper into the history here on Zillow, they, after buying it, they tried to rent it out for almost $2,300 a month. $2,300 a month for this 1,100 square foot townhome. Crazy, right? Well, that's what the rents were going for back in early to mid 2022. However, since then, they had to cut the rent all the way below $1,700 a month. So the rents here in Las Vegas in many different neighborhoods are starting to go down a lot, and these Wall Street investors are being forced to cut the rent. And that's why in some ways this sell-off was inevitable, at least in my opinion, because these investors, it's really difficult for them to deal with declining rents in an environment where the mortgage and the interest rates have surged so much. The 30-year fixed mortgage rate is 7%, roughly equivalent to their cost of debt when they raised money to buy these houses. In addition, the 10-year treasury yield's over 4%, meaning that U.S. government bonds return about as much annual cash flow as a rental property in Vegas. And so in some ways, folks, this business model of hedge funds buying houses, it might have been already over before it started with the rise in interest rates. But as I said in the beginning, the impact of this potential sell-off and the legislation, if it goes through, is really limited to specific cities and neighborhoods. I talked about Vegas. I talked about Phoenix. Another one would be Atlanta. Atlanta is a metro that these investors just absolutely piled into. They bought up a lot of houses for cheap at the bottom of the last housing downturn. Certain zip codes in Atlanta saw home prices go down 50% in the last downturn. So these investors, they just kind of scooped up a lot of properties in Atlanta and other cities for 60, 70, 80 grand, 100 grand on the cheap, and they turned around and rented them out. And according to Redfin, at the peak of the investor buying spree in 2021, 2022, investors were purchasing almost 35% of the houses in the Atlanta metro, but really it was concentrated on the southern end of the metro and some of these more low-income areas. Actually, in Atlanta, these investors were buying 50% of the homes. And that's the other thing about this investor home buying that not a lot of people notice, is the fact that they really target lower income neighborhoods. And they target lower income neighborhoods because the home prices there are cheaper. And so when the home prices are cheaper, they can theoretically earn a higher yield and higher return. And that's really an unfortunate aspect of how these investors did their strategies over the last 10 years, is they really focused on areas where people were already struggling to afford rent and afford mortgage payments. Those were the areas that they bought up the homes and pushed up the prices by even more, and now theoretically will crash the prices by more. Now, I don't think the U.S. government wants a major crash in prices. That's why this legislation is going to allow the investors to sell it over 10 years, you know, maybe reducing their portfolio by 10% a year. But if you are a Wall Street investor or another investor that owns in these neighborhoods, you're probably going to try to front run that time frame and get out fast and get out immediately, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if even on the, you know, the mention of this legislation, A lot of investors try to sell out of some of these neighborhoods because they see what's coming, especially in a city like Jacksonville. Jacksonville, across the whole metro, one of the biggest areas that investors piled into, particularly on the west side of Jacksonville. Investors bought as much as 50% of all the homes, which is data from Redfin. Redfin actually used to have this zip code investor data available on their website, but they mysteriously took it down a couple weeks ago after I did a tweet thread talking about it. That's kind of interesting. It would be good if they put it back up so you guys can see the areas that are most exposed to a potential investor sell-off. But I still have the data that I downloaded from them about a year ago. And you could see in Jacksonville, majority of the investor presence was on the western side of the city, where, again, they were buying close to 50% of the homes at the peak of the bubble in the pandemic in areas that are generally low income and high poverty. Now, an interesting question to ask is this legislation actually going to pass? It was introduced in Congress a couple days ago. It's being led by the Democrats. And so far, I haven't seen too much opposition to it. I suspect some Republicans are going to come out in opposition because this is kind of the government meddling in who can buy homes and who can't buy, and, you know, the government adding regulation to the housing market. But I got to be honest, everyone, this is a type of regulation for the housing market that I don't think is going to have too many negative consequences. I mean, some of these investors, Wall Street hedge funds, they might try to find ways around this. You know, they might try to find what's called a stalking horse bidder, where they find someone to buy the house who isn't their entity and then just pay them a fee to do it. Like, that type of stuff might happen. But really, there's not going to be too many people that are sad to see these Wall Street hedge funds exit the housing market if this actually happens.
Now, interestingly, guys, I polled you here on my YouTube channel, and I asked you the question. Do you think
Happy Friday to all you magnificent melon heads out there. It is 3:15 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, and that means it's my favorite time of the week, our weekly wrap-up live stream. What a week it has been. Number go up, stocks to the moon, at least for most of the week. But the story of the week, guys, and it's the story of today, is the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve contradicted itself after contradicting itself earlier in the week, and before contradicting itself later in the day. They contradicted themselves, then contradicted, then contradicted, and then contradicted. How dare you contra my diction, Jerome Powell said. Well, we had John Williams came out today. Austin Goolsbee came out today. Jerome Powell on Wednesday, all saying something different. But don't worry, guys, they are a data-dependent institution. We're not just making it up as we go here. We are basing our monetary policy, that which determines the value of the currency, which rules your life and really is the world reserve currency, rules everybody's life in the world. We don't just make this up as we go. We make it up based on the totality of incoming economic data. And that's why in the middle of the meeting, three of these guys got up and ran out of the room like they really had to pee to go change their location on the dot plot, because they saw something that scared them and said, more rate cuts, more rate cuts. Rate cuts that 2 weeks ago they weren't even thinking about or talking about. And then they ran up and, you know, talked about them. And then we found out today that they weren't even talking about them when they were talking about them. And then later in the day, they talked about them. These are the people steering monetary policy, guys. And no, I'm not making this up. And no, I'm not exaggerating. This is how monetary policy is being handled in the United States. Allow me, if you will, let us go back in time. The distant past, days of old, ancient history, 2 weeks ago. All right. When we had our boy Jay Powell at Spelman College with the world watching. I'm going to play this video for you guys just to refresh your memory here a little bit. Because, again, this is so long ago. Right. It's back when dinosaurs ruled the earth. 2 weeks ago, Jerome Powell said this.
It would be premature to conclude with confidence that we have achieved a sufficiently restrictive stance or to speculate on when policy might ease. We are prepared to tighten policy further if it becomes appropriate to do so.
It would be premature to talk about easing. We have no confidence. We may need to tighten further. Well, apparently, they've matured an awful lot in 2 weeks, because that was 2 weeks ago, Jerome Powell said, not even thinking about it. And then, of course, we all saw what happened on Wednesday, if you guys were watching my live stream when Powell was talking. What changed in 2 weeks? We got some inflation data that showed inflation was actually being pretty stubborn. Core inflation is still at 4%, double the Fed's target. So the inflation data didn't improve in 2 weeks. What about the jobs numbers? We got the jobs number, 199,000 jobs created. Well, that was more than the jobs that were created last month. So that data was also slightly more inflationary. We got data that said wage gains were exceeding the official rate of inflation. That too was inflationary. All the changes to the totality of incoming economic data were all saying slightly higher inflation. Again, I'm not a big fan of those data points. They're government data points. But if you're basing your monetary policy on the totality of economic data, that's what you have to go on. Well, all that data, nothing changed. So what spooked them? What changed so much? Why did these guys get up in the middle of the meeting and go change the number of rate cuts they were calling for on the dot plot after telling us they weren't even considering it? And then why today, after all of this circus played out over the last 2 weeks and then on Wednesday, why today did John Williams come out and say we're not even talking about rate cuts after talking about rate cuts? And then why several hours after that, right around lunchtime, after John Williams was finished, along comes Austin Goolsbee, another Fed governor, and he says we might need to cut rates in March. Okay, guys, hang on. Are we all taking the walk here? Do you understand why we're all a little out of place here? Everybody in the world is piling into stocks right now because the Fed said a thing after the Fed said opposite of thing, and before the Fed said other opposite of thing, and then again Fed said thing. You know what, guys? I'm beginning to think nobody really knows what they're going to do. And everybody is just piling into stocks like there's no tomorrow. And I can see the comments, oh, another roasted bear. Blah, blah. Look, guys, I've been sitting in Bitcoin, gold, silver, and picking up 5% and change in T-bills all year. I'm doing fine as a perma bear. I am perfectly fine. And my risk-reward profile, my risk profile looks just fine. All you guys piling into NVIDIA calls, congratulations, you've done great. That's going to work right up until it doesn't. And I don't know when it doesn't, but we've got some clues about maybe when it doesn't work anymore. Because has anybody seen reverse repo today? Whoa, big drop in reverse repo today. I saw that one a few hours ago hit the tape, and I remember just saying, whoa, $683 billion for reverse repo. That is down another $86 billion today. It is a new low, the lowest since the middle of 2021. Reverse repo dropped by $155 billion this week. Okay, now, I am not an expert on the mechanics and the inner workings of the bond markets. There are other people, especially some folks on FinTwit, who are very good about making these detailed maps with boxes and lines that go around and then cut to the left and then up a little bit around the other box and then connect to this other obscure acronym. All right. There's some people that are really good at painting a picture that confuses the hell out of me about how the inner workings of the bond market work. But I do know this. Money is flowing out of the reverse repo at an incredible rate. It picked up speed this week, and stocks are going higher and bonds are going higher. So regardless of where the squiggles go in between, regardless of the steps and where we park and how this mechanism works to here and then an overnight repurchase collateralized partially by this and that, and oh my God, all these other terms nobody understands, the money's leaving reverse repo and it's making its way into stocks and bonds. All right, that you can cut out all the crap in the middle, beginning and end. If you understand those two, the crap in the middle is nice to know. But really, the net effect is money is flowing into bonds and stocks from the reverse repo right now. And there's down to $683 billion. That's down from a peak of $2.5 trillion last New Year's Eve last year. It was around $2.2 trillion at the end of the year. But when that money runs out, where is the dry powder to drive this market higher? So there's a couple of takeaways. There is still more dry powder to send this market higher. There's still $683 billion. Sitting in reverse repo. So there's more money that could drain into the market and start chasing assets and bid these prices up higher, but there's not much. It's going to last for about another month and a half, 2 months at its current rate. And when that runs out, the buyers are exhausted, and that's when the bears take over. Be careful, guys. Be careful, you people who are chasing, as I like to say, no FOMO. And with that, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? I want to say hi to my buddy Mish, who is here live via satellite from beautiful Costa Rica. Mish, how we doing today, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. Look, got a little cough, so I'm going to be sounding a little bit rough.
Yeah, you picked up a little something in your travels. I'm sorry to hear that. But I am still living vicariously through you in that warm climate, because it is cold here in Southeast Pennsylvania today. Feel bad for my chickens out in that cold. But what's your take on the Fed this week?
The fruit here is ridiculously good.
Good fruit. Fruits, as they said, in This Is 40. Oh, you can have fruits. That's good. So what's your take on the Fed, on the reverse repo drawdown, on the contradicting of itself? I mean, am I way off base here, or do I just need to say?
No, I think if we look back, I think I told you, I don't know, about a month ago that there was some kind of line for mechanics, and I thought it was 750 is what I'd heard. But then we heard somewhere around 600, 650. So we are going to mechanically start running out of money, because we noticed today there's more banks, each has less money. So as banks run out of money, you won't really see it on the reverse repo chart. That bank just won't have anything else in there.
Yeah, I did notice it was
going to be an uneven kind of thing.
And when you said more banks, the reverse repo, I noticed yesterday, I didn't catch how many counterparties it was today, but yesterday it was 92 counterparties took home, or sent out, I should say, 760 some odd billion. That was up from the high 80s last week. So we've got more players participating, but less total cash going in. Yes. So when he says more banks participating, and that's not just banks. I believe hedge funds and other institutions, money markets are also.
Yeah, some of the institutions can do that. Also, there's European banks. They're allowed to do it too.
Yeah. By the way, things in Europe not going so well. GDP numbers keep getting worse there. And Lagarde, Christine the Felon, she very specifically ruled out any rate cuts in her talk this week. She did not follow suit with Powell. So we've got the Fed more dovish than Europe right now. Wow.
Well, and on top of that, you have some debt problems going on. And one in Germany, they got rid of the debt limit this year. They have to do a vote, but they do it every year. They've done it the last 3 years. There's also some debt issues coming out of Italy that the EU wants to kind of streamline their debt a little.
Mm. Could we see a return of the pigs? Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain? Is that those were the countries during the European sovereign debt crisis? Are we going to have a rehash of that?
I don't think it'll be. Greece, you haven't heard a lot about. In Spain, you haven't, but you've definitely heard a lot about Italy. So the acronym might be different, but yeah, I think some sovereign nations there in Europe are going to have issues soon.
All right. Well, why don't we first I have to say thank you to KDM before we go through the markets. Thank you, KDM, for the super chat, sir. I appreciate the support of the channel. He says FOMC is just a game of telephone. You know, it really is. I made a joke on Twitter today. I used the GIF from the cutting the head off the chicken and dropping it on the wheel in South Park about how they determine monetary policy. And, you know, that wasn't meant to be an instruction manual. That was meant to be satire. And yet, after watching all these Fed governors say all these different things, and you're right, a game of telephone. Correct me, I've never played telephone, but that's like where the rumor mill kind of changes the story a little bit with each person involved. That's what happened today, wasn't it? I mean, 2 weeks ago, not even thinking about rate cuts. Wednesday, thinking about rate cuts. This morning, we're not talking about rate cuts. And then this today at lunch, let's talk about rate cuts. Maybe you should make up your mind. So the rest of us, our lifestyle kind of depends on it. You know, our future, our savings, our retirement, little things like that. But no, please have fun with your game of telephone.
So something we learned in communication skills is that you retain 80% of what you hear. So if the person is that starts at 100%, the next guy's 80, the next guy's 64. And it just starts going down like that. So you get about the third or fourth person, it's a completely different story.
I'm sorry, you lost me about 20% of the way in there. I didn't get that. I'm just kidding.
No, it's an 80% rule. You retain 80%. Oh, I see what you did.
It took you a minute, but you picked it up. Just so you know, Mish and I, we've been having internet connection issues over the last few days, you know, with the traveling and everything. And so, and when I said you lost me about 20% of the way in, didn't register. That was a joke right away. Thank you, KBM. I appreciate the super chat, support of the channel. And you're right. It really was just a ridiculous game of telephone today. And there's two, in seriousness, we're cracking jokes about this, but this is too freaking important, guys. And we're going to go a little bit further. I got a story queued up, one in particular that's going to piss you off. about this, because this is not just making lives more difficult, not just making life more expensive. This is ruining lives, ruining families, what they're doing. And what they did this week is going to make this thing much worse, much worse. So let's go real quick through markets before we get into those stories. We got the S&P is right now pretty much unchanged for the day, down a measly 5 points. Still, though, way up near all-time highs, 4,713. We'll see how we trade into the close. The Dow is at 37,231 points, down 17 today, just off its all-time high. And the NASDAQ is up on the day, 14,809 for the NASDAQ, up 47 points or 0.32% higher. So tech is outperforming the other stocks today. On the commodities board, rough day for precious metals. Gold is down 10 bucks, about a half of 1%. February gold futures at 2,034. March silver futures at 2,415. That's down 23 cents or almost a full percent lower. We have got platinum is down 2%. Palladium rocketing again today. 5.8% higher for March palladium futures, trading at $1,186. That's up 65%. There's been some volatility in palladium recently. I don't know what's going on there. Is that auto related? Is that mine related? Gonna have to look into that one, because palladium, the PGM metals are usually pretty volatile, but palladium in particular has had some pretty big moves this week. So might have to put a pin in that one. Crude oil, meanwhile, pretty much unchanged on the day. January WTI futures, 71.51. That's down a little over a nickel or 0.1% lower. The DXY U.S. dollar is 57 basis points higher at 102.52. I wouldn't exactly be celebrating that if you're a dollar bull, though, because, well, let's zoom out on the Dixie chart to, say, the last 3 months. And now, yeah, doesn't look so good, does it? The dollar has been absolutely bludgeoned. We were, at the beginning of February, we were at 107 and change, and now here we are at 102.5. So the dollar has been severely weakened, and not surprising, because the Fed pivoted this week, and, well, dollars get weaker when Feds go pivot. Looking over at the bond market, a little bit of a mixed bag in bond yields today. The 30-year yield, 4.009, that's down 4.5 basis points. The 10-year, 3.909, down 2 basis points. 2-year, however, is up quite a bit, 4.453. That's up 5 basis points. Interesting deviation between the two and the longer end of the curve today. And, wow, look at that. Even the 1 month is a little bit higher, 5.383 on the 1 month treasury. So yields are a little wonky right now. Before we get into the next chart, I want to say thank you to Kevin DiBella. Kevin is saying the Fed and this government would rather see hyperinflation than see number go down. Yes. Absolutely. Before I get to the rest of the comment, you're right, because our education system has failed our youth in anything resembling financial literacy. We just don't teach it. So unless you're lucky enough to have parents who teach you finance, or if you're motivated enough to go self-educate in finance, you will know nothing about finance in your life, and it rules your life. And so it's very easy for the politicians to say companies suddenly got greedy in 2022, and that's why we had inflation. Definitely wasn't our money printers and our stimmy money and the helicopter money, right? So that kind of low IQ BS still passes muster with more than half of the voting age population. So yes, Kevin, the Fed and the government would rather see hyperinflation then see number go down, because it's easier for them to try to explain it away with their BS. I agree with that wholeheartedly. It's a shame. And one of the goals of this channel is that we start to at least take a little chunk out of that problem. And I hope we're doing a good job with that. They went to crush the middle class to buy it all out from under us. That is what they went to do, and have a new feudal system, like Greg M says. You're right. WTF happened in 1971. I mean, if you want to visually see the destruction of the middle class, this is how you see it. I'm surprised it didn't pop up. This first chart that comes up on WTF happened in 1971. This is the destruction of the middle class. This is the wealth gap visualized. And it all started right there. 1971 is when the deviation happened, when we went off the gold standard. That is when monetary debasement became institutionalized. That is when people kept generating more and more economic activity through their work, but they didn't see any of that in the form of wage gains because of this perpetual cycle of inflation driving up asset prices and then eventually driving up consumer prices, But in the third step, right before the wages rise to offset that increase in consumer prices, the Fed raises interest rates so people lose jobs and the wages never go up, resetting the cycle. And if you keep doing that over and over again, over time, you get this monumental gap between compensation and productivity. All the economic benefits from your work is going to the top and you are getting a pittance of it. And I mean, Jerome Powell said it in his own words. They don't want wages to go up because they think that would be inflationary. Forget the fact that he just juiced asset prices, which is inflationary. Forget the fact that the money printing caused consumer prices to go up, which is inflationary. Oh, people making more money can't have that. This Keynesian stupidity, this Keynesian boogeyman, wage spiral inflation that lurks behind every shadow. And that's what happens over time. I mean, this chart, I mean, if you want to explain the wealth gap, why are so many so poor while so few have some policy? It's not because of greedy corporations. It is the Federal Reserve working in cahoots with Congress to debase the currency. That explains it. And so many of the problems that we fight and bicker and argue and sometimes commit acts of violence against each other over would be solved, or at the very least severely lessened, if we would stop doing this. So thank you, Kevin. That was an excellent comment, sir. And yes, also shout out to the man, Greg Manarino, the King Lion. Thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate the super chat, the support of the channel. And hopefully more people figure this out before what's left of the middle class is beaten down and obliterated. Now, let's talk about a couple of things that happened today. First of all, this one is a big one. Overnight reverse repo, $683.258 billion. Big step change down here today. We're down $155 billion for the week. All right, I talked about this on the morning live stream today. Understand, guys, reverse repo is money that was printed during the pandemic and after the pandemic. It was all that QE money. Not all of it made its way into circulation. That's important to keep in mind. They expanded the money supply, and they realized, hey, that expansion of the money supply is going to cause an inflation problem. So they created this place for money to go where it wouldn't chase assets and it wouldn't chase goods and services. And that was the reverse repo. And that's where $2.3 trillion or so of that money had been sitting right up until they suspended the debt ceiling earlier this year. Now, that money has started to work its way back into the economy. Even though the Fed has been engaged in quantitative tightening, destroying money, the effective money supply has been going up because the reverse repo has been draining. That money has been chasing bonds. It's been chasing stocks, and that is driving those values higher. So even though the money supply is shrinking, the stock market and the bond market haven't yet seen that. And I made this chart. Here you go. This is the chart of reverse repo, just to show you where we're heading. We're heading down towards zero. We're on pace to get there sometime middle, end of February timeframe. This chart hasn't updated yet. Oh, yes, it did. No, it hasn't updated yet. I added this little red line at the end because the TradingView chart is a little slow to update. It won't update until tomorrow. But where this little red line is here, that's where we're at right now. Back on this trend line that's been there for a while, we're back below that. We keep bouncing off of it. And, you know, sometime middle end of February, there's not going to be any more of that money sitting on Mars in the reverse repo ready to come back in and chase asset prices. When this money runs out, there's nothing left to bid up the price of stocks and bonds. The money would have to come from somewhere else. And I made this chart here. Spent a decent amount of time putting this chart together because this visualizes it pretty well. Let me make this a little bit bigger so you guys can see it better. We're going to take my melon off the screen here. All right. So what you're looking at in blue, you may recognize, is the inverse of that reverse repo chart we were just looking at. So I just flipped it upside down. So down is up, up is down. All right. Just to better visualize, because it's important to remember, money coming out of reverse repo is money entering circulation. And that's why reverse repo coming down is liquidity going up. So I inverted the reverse repo chart. And then the other thing you're looking at here in orange, this is the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. This money coming down, this chart's not inverted. This stuff coming down, this is money being destroyed. So what you can see here is as the Fed has been destroying money, the money has been leaving reverse repo and re-entering circulation. So it's offsetting that monetary destruction. It's actually more than offsetting that monetary destruction because these scales are the same. Now, you're going from, for the Fed's balance sheet, you're going from $7 trillion to $9.2 trillion on the left-hand axis. With the reverse repo, you're going from $2.8 trillion down to $600 billion. So the change is the same. They're different locations, but the scale is the same. And this just goes to show you guys that the reverse repo has more than offset quantitative tightening. Now, that's really important because they finally mentioned reverse repo and they mentioned quantitative tightening on Wednesday at the Fed press conference. And Jerome Powell kind of suggested, he didn't use the exact words, but he suggested that the Fed would stop quantitative tightening before the reverse repo was empty. The words he used, he said something like, we believe reserves right now are more than ample and we'll begin to slow our tightening before reserves go below ample. I mean, he used a lot of wishy-washy language. In my interpretation, though, he was saying we are going to be done with quantitative tightening before the reverse repo empties. Now, that's important, guys, because that means they're going to be done tightening before they even start tightening. Because all this reverse repo cash has offset everything they've done so far. So the market has not actually seen any quantitative tightening yet. They have seen the rate hikes. That has affected the market. But the actual money destruction, the decline in the M2 money supply, let me bring up M2SL. I should have had that chart ready to go. This decline in the money supply, the first decline since the Great Depression, you know, here we go. This is the money supply. It's rising during the pandemic. It goes up to about 21.6 trillion. And now the Fed, as they've been waxing or waning quantitatively doing their QT, the money supply has actually been falling. It's the first time since the Great Depression that the money supply has been falling. And, you know, we're obviously not in a second Great Depression, at least not yet. Everything's still going up. Well, WTF. That's because this reverse repo cash is masking that decline in the money supply. It's more than masking it because reverse repo has fallen from 2.3 trillion to about 0.8 trillion. So that's about $1.5 trillion of new money entering the system, even though the Fed has gone from 8.9 down to 7.7. So the Fed has gone down by 1.2 while reverse repo has injected 1.5, a net liquidity addition. So this money's chasing assets. It's bidding bond prices up, sending the yields lower. And eventually this money is working its way into stocks too. And you saw that this week. We saw this big, massive drawdown in reverse repo right as all of this money flowed into the stock market this week after the Fed said what they said. So the market has not yet felt any of this quantitative tightening. It has not even begun, and they're already talking about ending it. And that's why this week was really historic. I can't overstate just how important what happened this week was. The steps that the Fed took and what they did, this pivot is going to go down in history, I think. It hasn't even started yet. Let me just mention that. They're only talking about the cuts, right? But if they're talking about it, it means they're coming very soon. So it was the pivot, even though they haven't actually lowered yet. And the market just took it and ran with it. I mean, the market's pricing in 6 rate cuts now, not 3. The Fed said 3. The market heard 6. But watch when this gets down to 0, guys. $600 billion left, $683 billion. It's going to be empty sometime in February if nothing changes. I don't know. Maybe something does change. Maybe they stop issuing so much new Treasury bills over Janet Yellen. She could stop issuing so much and start spending down the Treasury general account. That would only buy them more time. It wouldn't solve the problem. It just delays it further. Kick the can again. This is a very can kicking kind of economy. So maybe that's what they do. But as far as QT goes, guys, it has not even started because reverse repo has offset all of it. Before we get into the next article, thank you, JJ Watt. He says, the question we should be asking is, will the Fed cut rates with the same scissors Yellen uses to cut her own hair? Hey, man, I buzz my own head. I can't make fun of Yellen for buzzing her own head.
Comments yesterday. I don't know where they're coming from either.
What was that, Mish?
I started seeing the haircut comments yesterday. I don't know where they're coming from.
I don't know if they use the same scissors, but I'm sure she uses a bowl, right? I mean, that's kind of a Beatles do that Yellen's got going there. Do we have a Yellen right here? I think we got Janet in here somewhere. You know, maybe we don't need Yellen on the screen. I mean, does anybody really want that? I don't think so. Thank you, JJ Watt. I appreciate the super chat and support of the channel. Let's be honest, there's plenty we can make fun of Janet Yellen for beyond her haircut. The physical domina that she is. She has definitely physically dominated Jerome Powell this week. There was this fight going on between the Fed and the Treasury, and Powell threw in the towel. And oh my God, that rhymed, not on purpose, but I'll take it. I feel like Don King right now. Powell threw in the towel. Good God. Thank you, JJ Watt, and thank you, Grandpa. Says, so Uncle Jerome and his sock puppets see something is coming that scares them. What is it and when? In my opinion, that is the truth, that they see something that scares them. There's other people who are out there saying politics. Without getting too political, I try to stay off the politics if I can help it here. You can't help it sometimes. There's a lot of people, like I saw an article in Zero Hedge yesterday, a lot of people on FinTwit are saying this was politically motivated. The Biden administration has been putting pressure, making comments, saying they don't think more rate cuts are done. Look, Powell is a Republican. He was appointed by Trump. Now, there's no love lost between Trump and Powell, that's for sure. Trump spent plenty of time blasting Powell on Twitter. But that being said, I don't think Powell would go out of his way to help reelect Biden. That just doesn't pass the sniff test with me. It really doesn't make sense to me. Now, that being said, the reason Powell is given for the cuts don't pass muster. I do think the Fed has over-tightened already. I do think they've already caused problems, but again, it's all been masked by this reverse repo. Now, what could they be seeing that scares them? I don't know. I mean, if the guys got up from the room Wednesday and went to change the dot plot, the data we got Wednesday was PPI. All right, that's the data point that came out that changed. And PPI was pretty low. It was, I think, 0.9% was the year-over-year number. And core PPI was 2% on the nose. But you know what PPI really is? PPI is producer price index. It's a commodity index. I mean, it doesn't specifically measure commodities, but what's the biggest input to producer prices? It's labor and it's commodities. That's really the cost there. So if PPI is really what caused them to get up and change their dot plot, then it's really just commodity prices. You didn't need a PPI reading to see that commodity prices were heading lower. You could see that every day. So I don't think it was PPI that drove this cut. It could be the fast approaching end of reverse repo. Maybe that is, but that's, look at this trend. Look at when this started back in like May, June timeframe. That's not something that changed in the last 2 weeks. So even reverse repo draining down, I don't think is what scared Powell. What did happen in the last 2 weeks? We had a real estate firm blew up in Europe, that firm Cigna. That could maybe be something. We're having plenty of problems in China. I don't think that would be. I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't know what Powell saw that spooked him, but I am definitely in the camp that something spooked Powell. Something scared him. I am not in the camp that it was politically motivated. Let me just say that. But I don't know what it is. He's got better access to data than I do. He's got his 400 PhDs working at him. I mean, they're the same 400 PhDs who came up with transitory. So I don't know what that piled higher and deeper degree is really worth. But I don't know. We're going to find out, though. I think we'll know within a few, maybe a few months, you know, lagging indicators and all. But watch unemployment, guys. That's another one. Keep an eye on unemployment. We're starting to see the anecdotes of the layoffs pile up. They're not going to hit unemployment indicators anytime soon. But thank you very much, Grandpa. Appreciate the super chat, sir. Support of the channel. Let's move on, shall we? Because we got a couple of other ones here. Well, first of all, here's this. Now, well, we already talked about the Fed guys. We're going to skip over the Fed comments because we already talked about them. Let's talk about this one. I put out that video yesterday about the attacks in the Red Sea. I mentioned them again this morning on my live stream because there was two more attacks in the Red Sea this morning. Two more ships were hit by either missiles or drones. While I was making that video yesterday, there were two more attacks. So I had to, while I was editing, go back and refilm two more segments about the two recent attacks that happened yesterday. And then today we got this one. So I guess the world is starting to pay attention to this because Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd, I don't know if I said that right, to avoid Red Sea voyages after attacks on ships. The container ship operators have asked captains in some cases to not cross a crucial strait heading to the Suez Canal. Shipping and logistics majors A.P. Moller and Maersk and Hapag-Lloyd have stopped their ships from entering the southern entrance of the Red Sea on Friday after attacks on their vessels. Maersk said in its decision that it comes after a near-miss incident involving the Maersk Gibraltar ship on Thursday and another attack on a container vessel on Friday. The company instructed all Maersk vessels to avoid the area bound to pass through the Bab el Mandeb Strait to pause their journey until further notice. We are deeply concerned about the highly escalated security situation in the southern Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, Maersk said in a statement. The recent attacks on commercial vessels in the area are alarming and pose a significant threat to the safety and security of seafarers. So you've got two major ship operators now. I don't know how big Hapag-Lloyd is, but Maersk is enormous. And they're telling their ships either stop or sail around the Horn of Africa. Now, this is effectively, we're not quite there yet, but we're getting to the point where this is almost as bad as, you guys remember back in 2021 when the Ever Given ran aground in the Suez Canal? You remember the little excavator that was trying to dig out that massive container ship that was run aground there and how that caused all the logistics problems all around the world? Well, that's not quite yet, but that's where we're heading right now with what the Houthis have done in the Red Sea. If we don't get our act together, we, the world community, whoever, like, I don't think it should be the United States Navy's responsibility to guarantee the safety of every ship from the Marshall Islands or the Bahamas or Hong Kong. I don't think it should be our sailors putting their asses on the line and our missiles and our tax dollars paying for it to protect container ships selling a cargo load of Chinese crap into Europe. I don't think our Navy should have to do that. But at the same time, I don't think sailors should be shot at. I don't think unarmed sailors should have to worry about freaking drones and missiles and hijackers from some rebel country and rebel group in some country that most people can't even find on a freaking map. So what? It's just a total mess. And, you know, I know the cover being, oh, they're Israeli ships. No, they're not. These ships are flagged from all over the world. Oh, maybe at one point they docked in Israel, or maybe some Israeli investor owns a share in a company or a piece of the boat. They're just firing missiles at anybody who comes close enough, and they're trying to lure in American ships, and then they're firing missiles and drones at the American ships. They're just looking for a headline. And this is a mess. It's getting worse. The U.S. is doing all the heavy lifting. The French are helping. The French frigate Languedoc, I said it like five different ways in the video because my French accent sucks. But let the world solve its own problem. This is not a U.S. problem. This is a world problem. So good luck, world. And
I think it's important to remember that the ships that aren't going through the Suez Canal, they're on like a 7-day clock here to where they're going to have to start going around the horn. But once they start, they're not going to come back, right? Once they make that decision, they're gone.
Yep. And guys, that is – keep in mind, there's a lot of images going around showing like, you know, the path that you have to take to go around the Horn of Africa. I think I have one from yesterday. Let me see if I can bring – I have that up here pretty close. Here – no, I don't. Son of a gun. No, I don't have that image. There's a lot of images showing that you have to sail around Africa, and, you know, here's the path through the Mediterranean, and it looks a little bit longer sailing around Africa. Remember, flat maps do not do the Earth justice, especially when you're talking longitudinally big sails down south around the Horn of Africa. That is a much, much longer trip than the map looks like it is because of the curvature of the Earth, and when you flatten it out, you distort the scale. That is a ridiculously long, expensive, and much more dangerous trip for ships to go all the way around the Horn of Africa. So,
yeah, this you're is talking a big about problem. Thousands of dollars, and Djibouti's bad enough as it is, but as you go around the coast, you keep setting yourself up for more attacks, or you have to go further out, and then it costs more money.
Yep. I mean, you've got the Somali, the pirating issue all up that coast, the eastern coast of Africa. I mean, you also have the pirate issue in the Gulf of Aden leading into the Bab el Mandeb Strait because the Somali pirates have been getting in on the action recently. One of the attacks, I forget the ship, but one of the ships that was hit by a missile, Somali pirates tried to board her And then one of the American destroyers ran off the pirates, actually chased them down and apprehended them. While that was happening, the Houthis fired drones at that ship. They were intercepted. Another thing to consider, guys, is our Navy is doing a phenomenal job intercepting these drones, by the way. They so far have a perfect score. They shot down every single one. And no Navy ships have been hit yet, thankfully. But eventually one gets through. These things are low and slow. These drones, you know, they're cheap little Iranian-made drones. They only cost $20,000 a piece, these Shahed 136 drones. They're kamikaze. They're just remote control bombs, basically, is all they are. They can be fired off the back of a truck. They cost $20,000 a piece. And even the cheapest interceptor missiles on board these U.S. destroyers cost $1 million a piece. So we're doing a very good job of shooting $20,000 drones down with $1 million missiles to protect ships from other countries right now. That is not a sustainable practice. This is a global problem, not a U.S. problem. Anyway, Mish, again, Navy guy, you want to weigh in on this a little bit?
I think people – all right, so when we come from the Med to the United States, we don't go straight across the ocean. We actually do – we follow what's called the Great Circle, and you go kind of north and back down, and it actually drops hundreds of miles doing it that way, right? It's called the Great Circle. If you go around Africa, you cannot take advantage of that at all, right? Because they're not going to go from the Horn of Africa over to the United States because you're in no man's land. You start going through the doldrums, all kinds of crazy crap. So it's going to have to go north and then west and go the Great Circle. Yeah, this is a nightmare for shipping.
Yeah. And I would add, it this hurts, in my opinion, without doing the math and really doing a deep dive into this, I think this hurts Chinese exports every bit as much as this hurts European trade or U.S. oil interests, whatever it might be, because a lot of those cargo containers going through there, they're shipments from Asia, right? They come down from China through the South China Sea, through the Malacca Strait, past Singapore into the Indian Ocean, then through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, which is something I didn't even know existed up until long ago. I could see it on a map. I didn't know what it was called. Through the Red Sea, through the Suez Canal, into the Mediterranean, where they have access to southern Europe, or from there through the Strait of Gibraltar, all the way up around Europe.
All right, folks, we're coming to the end of the hour here, and I'm going to shut it down. Please donate to the station. We appreciate you being here. Y'all have
Trump the Don, back at it again, this time in a country rap song. Shout out High Res. God bless the USA. Stop sending billions to Ukraine. Put America first for a change. When they fail, I'm the one that they blame. I only ran for president cause I had one thing on my mind. To make the country better than it's ever been, but you got Biden's lies. And if you love the country, then we're on the same side. I got love for America, I got American pride. They tried to kick me out the White House. Next year, that's my house. Fapo, around and find out. Trump 2024, all the communists, they will cry now. No more fake news selling lies.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio, Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyphen, thank you. Welcome to the crypt.
is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement. Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom every Saturday.